Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. We have on the show with us today Frank Mannion, who is Senior Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice. Mr. Mannion recently represented an astronomer named Martin Gaskell, who filed a lawsuit against the University of Kentucky alleging religious discrimination because he was denied a job to oversee a new observatory at the University of Kentucky. And as the evidence came out in this case, it very much looked like Professor Gaskell was denied this job essentially because of his perceived views on evolution as well as his religious beliefs. So we're very fortunate to have Frank Mannion with us today to talk about this case. Thank you so much for coming on the show with us.
My pleasure, Casey.
So Martin Gaskell obviously is an astronomer, and it's my understanding that he's originally from the United Kingdom. He received his PhD at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and he applied for this job at the University of Kentucky a few years ago and was denied the job. What else can you tell us about Martin Gaskell and sort of the events that led up to his being denied the job at the University of Kentucky?
Sure. Well, one thing that people need to understand about Martin and his application for this job is there's been an awful lot of misinformation out there on the web and on the blogosphere since this thing hit the media. He was not a stranger to this position. When the University of Kentucky decided that they wanted to construct a student observatory, the person they went to for advice was Martin Gaskell. Several of the members of the physics and astronomy department were aware of Martin's work as an astronomer, but particularly as someone who had constructed and overseen the design and development of a similar student observatory at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. So two of the members of the physics and astronomy department actually went out to Lincoln to visit with Martin to find out how one goes about designing a usable and useful student observatory, and in this particular case, on top of a parking garage on the campus of the University of Kentucky. So when two or three years later, when Kentucky was looking to hire an observatory director, somebody told Martin about it, and of course he sent in his application. He was one of maybe 12 people, maybe more, who applied for the job, and early on he was told that he was on the short list. And eventually, there's no dispute about this, he was considered the leading candidate by, I'd say, a majority of the members of the search committee.
And that's very interesting, Mr. Mannion, because I recall reading, actually, in one of the court's rulings that it was admitted in some of the emails among the University of Kentucky faculty who were on the hiring committee for this position that, essentially, Martin Gaskell was undisputed as the most qualified candidate for this job, and yet they denied him this job. What was the real reason that they denied Martin Gaskell this job at the University of Kentucky?
Well, you mentioned the emails, and it's important to point out that most of what we know about what went on here comes from the words of members of the physics and astronomy department at the university itself. I've never had a case, and I've been doing these sort of religious discrimination cases for over 15 years now, I've never had a case where we had so many smoking guns. We're lucky if you ever get a smoking gun. We had so many smoking guns, we had an entire arsenal of smoking guns in this case. And those smoking guns consisted of the actual words of the members of the astronomy department themselves, who on numerous occasions said things like, Gaskell has clearly been doing everything we want an observatory director to do for years. He is head and shoulders above any of the other applicants. He is breathtakingly above the other applicants in experience for this job. Not only that, and those are sort of subjective findings, I suppose, to a certain extent, early on in the process, when the members of the department met to evaluate the candidates on a numerical basis, they actually ranked them on a scale of 1 to 10, and Gaskell came in first by far. And the fellow who eventually ended up getting the job came in tied for third. So what turned the process around? Well, in addition to all of this praise being heaped upon Martin by those who were looking at his credentials objectively, one member of the search committee discovered on the internet a set of lecture notes that Martin had put on a website, a personal website, from a lecture that he had given on a handful of occasions on invitation of various groups at universities. And the title of the lecture was Modern Astronomy, the Bible, and Creation. And this consisted of about 12 pages of his lecture notes, of a lecture that really was about what it said, modern astronomy, the Bible, and creation. The point of the lecture, if it had one single point, was to demonstrate to people that there is not necessarily any sort of incompatibility between believing in the Christian religion and the findings of modern astronomy. So how did this become an evolution case? That's what's so curious about this. He never gave the lecture on evolution. Contrary to some of the press reports I've read, he's never gone around the country lecturing on evolution or speaking about his doubts about Darwinian evolution. He's never done any of that. What he did do was, in the course of this lecture on modern astronomy and cosmology and those sorts of things, he has made passing references to evolution and how modern theories of evolution are not necessarily incompatible with a Christian belief. In the course of doing that, and in these particular lecture notes, this was seized upon by a couple of people on the search committee, he made the following statement. It is true that there are significant scientific problems in evolutionary theory. However, this is not what the focus should be on. And then he goes on to say that the real problem with evolution, as far as he's concerned, are the atheistic extrapolations and inferences that some people draw in order to lay a foundation for a materialistic outlook, which, of course, he rejects as an evangelical Christian. That quote is one quote that seems to have gotten him in trouble here, because it was seized upon by several members of the committee and then members of the biology department with whom they consulted, and the biologists, who were all clearly ideologues when it comes to this whole question of evolution and eager to sniff out any trace of any possible creationist or even intelligent design viewpoint, pounced upon that statement and really went to war to make sure that Gaskell didn't get the job. And unfortunately, they succeeded.
Well, I think that you raised a very interesting point there, Mr. Mannion, and that is that, of course, Martin Gaskell is not a creationist. He made it very clear that he accepts an old Earth, the conventional age of the universe.
Right.
He did say, as you mentioned, that there are significant problems in evolutionary theory, and he probably really offended them when he said, these problems are bigger than is usually made out in introductory geology or biology courses.
Right.
That probably really made them upset. However, he did not have any particular problem necessarily with sort of the mainstream conventional evolutionary viewpoint, aside from some of the atheistic interpretations. So what's interesting from our perspective here at Discovery Institute, of course, is not so much what Professor Gaskell actually believed, but what they thought he believed and how they discriminated against him on the basis of what they thought he believed. They thought that he was like a proponent of intelligent design, or they thought that he was a full-blown skeptic of Darwinian evolution. And, you know, I don't even know exactly what Professor Gaskell believes, and of course he's entitled to hold whatever position he wants on this. But what is very clear is that the University of Kentucky thought that he was a skeptic of Darwinian evolution, a proponent of intelligent design, or, as you put it, they thought that he was a creationist.
Right.
Some of them even thought he was a young Earth creationist.
Exactly.
I don't know where they got that from. But they clearly had an intense animosity and bias against skeptics of Darwinian evolution. Would you agree with that, Mr. Mannion?
Yeah, there's no question about it. And you've hit on something that's important. The reason we could call this a case of discrimination is that in the face of evidence, as you pointed out, that he is not a skeptic of Darwinism in any conventional sense of the word, and that he repeatedly states in those same lecture notes his acceptance of modern theories of evolution, and he finds a way to reconcile that with his religious faith, as some people do. In the face of those statements, which they completely ignored, they decided that he must be some sort of a skeptic of Darwinism, if not a young Earth creationist. And here's what happened. When we would point out to the biologists in particular in depositions that, well, you say he's a creationist, but here are five statements in these same lecture notes that you were reviewing where he says he's not one. How is it that you conclude he's a creationist? Well, then they were sort of backed into the position of saying, well, it's not these notes. It's the other things on his website. And what specifically did they point to? On a personal profile part of the website, which is clearly not something that's intended to be professional or scholarly. It's something that the University of Nebraska created to get students kind of to know something about their professors personally. he was asked, as they all were asked, what's your favorite quote? And he has a scripture quote from the letter of St. James. Also, when they asked him, what do you like about teaching teaching astronomy? He said, as a Christian, I enjoy sharing with my students the richness of God's creation. And so this is what the biologist pounced upon and said, this shows that he's not a full-fledged scientist or not a legitimate scientist. And when we couple that with this one cryptic sort of could go either way, equivocal statement about problems in evolutionary theory, that was enough for some of these folks to brand him as quote-unquote unworthy of a scientific position at the University of Kentucky.
That's just absolutely stunning, especially when you read some of these emails, and we've covered some of this on Evolution News,
right.
And there's also evidence on the ACLJ website, aclj.org, how qualified Professor Gaskell was for this position, head and shoulders above the other applicants. Now, you mentioned something to me, Mr. Manning, on the side, that Eugenie Scott, who is, the executive director of the National Center for Science Education, basically a pro-evolution activist group, that she had some involvement in the case, and I'm intrigued to find out from you a little bit more about what her involvement was in this situation.
Yeah, this was absolutely mind-blowing to me and to those of us who worked on this case for Professor Gaskell, because we knew of Eugenie Scott, we knew of her background, we knew of the position she normally takes on any case involving evolution versus creation or intelligent design. And in the middle of one of the depositions in this case, we were taking the deposition of the chair of the search committee. And as you'll recall from reviewing some of the emails, the chair of the search committee was the one who was gung-ho that Gaskell is perfectly qualified, head and shoulders above everybody else, and the only reason we're not hiring him is because some people don't like his religious beliefs. He actually put that in writing. That was one of the several smoking guns I was talking about earlier. Well, this particular gentleman also was a friend of Eugenie Scott. Apparently, Eugenie Scott taught years and years ago at the University of Kentucky. And this professor was aware of what she had gone on to do, and so he contacted her in the middle of the search process and said, basically, have you ever heard of Martin Gaskell? He's clearly the most qualified for the job, but some people on the committee are making noise about his beliefs about evolution. What do you know about him? So in the middle of the deposition, we were handed this sheaf of correspondence, and Eugenie Scott, who I'm sure is familiar to all of your listeners, responded that she not only read these same lecture notes that folks at Kentucky were so upset about, she also called a colleague at Gaskell's previous employment at the University of Nebraska to discuss Gaskell's position vis-a-vis evolution, and she essentially gave him a clean bill of health. She said that he appears to be perfectly accepting of evolution. I know of no reason not to hire him. As long as he's not talking about religion in class, which he's never done and no one has ever contended that he did, I think he could be a good person for the job. This was from Eugenie Scott. This was even shared with the members of the search committee, and yet they still didn't really back down from their position on Gaskell. Now, what's even more intriguing is, after this case sort of hit the media about a month ago or in early December, apparently Eugenie Scott flip-flopped. I mean, we were kind of curious to hear what she would have to say because those of us involved in litigation knew what she had said privately in this correspondence with a member of the search committee and basically saying that Gaskell was fine from her standpoint. But apparently once this case got into the media, the NCSE and Ms. Scott took the opposite position and apparently have been going around labeling Gaskell as an intelligent design creationist. I really found this somewhat shocking, this flip-flop for no apparent reason. And this isn't somebody who had just been asked, over coffee, have you ever heard of Gaskell? She said that she read his lecture notes and spoke to somebody at the University of Nebraska and was satisfied that he was not a quote-unquote problem from her standpoint.
Of course, the point here is that nothing implies that Eugenie Scott would endorse a Darwin skeptic for this scientific position in a university. I want to remind our listeners what you just said, Mr. Manning. It was because Eugenie Scott thought that Martin Gaskell was a full-blown proponent of evolution that she thought he was acceptable for the job. But as soon as she sort of came to the realization that he might not have been a dyed-in-the-wool evolutionist, she changed her view about whether he deserved the job. So let's be clear what we mean when we say that she flip-flopped. It's not that somehow Eugenie Scott changed her view about whether Darwin skeptics deserve a place in the academy. It's that she changed her view about whether Gaskell was a Darwin skeptic. And once she decided he was, well, now she's going around defending the university's decision not to hire him. It's interesting that people are actually calling the NCSC to sort of get approval as to whether or not they can hire people who might be Darwin skeptics.
It's more than interesting. It's kind of frightening.
Yeah.
I mean, one part of Ms. Scott's letter, which still disturbs me, and even in spite of this, she approved, quote-unquote, Gaskell. She said something about, you know, evangelicals, you have to be careful because they have this this desire to spread the gospel, and so you have to sort of be careful with them when you're considering hiring them. I found that to be an outrageous statement. At the same time, she also said that there's no reason to think that Gaskell would not be a good hire, so... you're right, though. It is kind of incredible that someone would contact her. I'm not so sure they were looking for approval. I think the professor who contacted her was thinking, well, if she thinks he's okay, how could these people have any problem with him? But they still had a problem with him.
So, Mr. Manning, you recently settled Professor Gaskell's case with the University of Kentucky. What can you tell us about the settlement and sort of where this is going from here?
Sure. Well, I mean, the case is over. It's an employment discrimination case. Martin Gaskell alleged certain financial losses caused by his not getting the job at Kentucky. And they offered the sum, eventually, of $125,000, which was almost right on target for what his financial losses were. And at that point, he made the decision, which we agreed with, that we would settle the case. I mean, I've seen some reference in some places to the idea that this was a small or relatively small settlement. And yet, you know, I mean, these are the same people who are always crying about the amounts of money that people get in lawsuits. I mean, Gaskell tried to be fair. This was his financial loss. When they offered that, he said, basically, I'm done. I mean, there was never going to be, and I know this is disappointing to a lot of folks who follow this issue closely from what I'm reading, there was never going to be in this case a ruling about, you know, on a sort of profound underlying issue. I mean, it's not that type of a vehicle for that. It's an employment discrimination case. And in any case, there are pros and cons of going to trial, and one can never be sure why a jury decides what it decides. So there are risks and benefits in settling and going to trial. But we were satisfied that by settling in this sort of public way, this was not a confidential settlement at all. Kentucky was, although not formally admitting that they had done any wrong. We certainly brought what happened to light. Gaskell has been compensated for what he actually lost. And we think the case has done an excellent job of shedding light on what is apparently all too common a procedure in academia, something that really needs to be changed.
Well, we certainly appreciate the service that you've done for Professor Gaskell in this case. And again, for our listeners, go to evolutionnews.org, and we have documented a number of the emails that actually talk about the discriminatory intent and sort of the anti-intelligent design bias at the University of Kentucky, and how these faculty members, especially the biologists, were very much willing to reject an applicant and discriminate against a scientist simply because that scientist at least was perceived to harbor doubts about Darwinism, even if in this case he didn't necessarily even have those doubts. Mr. Manning, one last point here. Our listeners of ID the Future are probably familiar with the term pretext. Mm-hmm. Pretext, of course, is the given reason for why you made a decision or you took some action. And the pretext often differs from the real reason. It's what you say publicly, not what you say privately. And of course, for our listeners, this case fits the typical pattern that we have seen in so many other cases of discrimination against proponents of intelligent design, in that you certainly have the given public reason why they didn't hire Professor Gaskell. They gave their pretext, but the actual reason, as told in the emails, was a very different story. Is that essentially what happened here?
Yeah, absolutely, that's what happened here. And the chair of the search committee, who, as I said before, wrote some of these incredible emails incriminating the whole process, predicted that that's exactly what would happen. He referred to Gaskell's religious beliefs as, quote, the elephant in the room. That everyone knew it was there. Everyone was talking about it. But as he said, I predict that when we meet to vote on the final decision here, it will not be mentioned and it will not make its way into any written report of what we decided here. And of course, he was absolutely accurate. There's no mention of Gaskell's religious beliefs, or if you prefer, his views on evolution and intelligent design and creationism in any of the formal summaries of this particular decision, even though, as the chair of the search committee referred to, those beliefs were the elephant in the room the entire time.
Wow. Well, you know, as you said, this is really a striking case to have this much behind-the-scenes email documentation of the actual reasons that they didn't hire Professor Gaskell. You don't get a case like this very often. But we have found here at Discovery Institute that when you are able to actually subpoena or file public documents requests of the internal communications among people, you often find the real story. That has been the case with Guillermo Gonzalez's denial of tenure at the Iowa State University, and it's also been the case in the current lawsuits over the California Science Center. And so congratulations on getting a very fair and favorable settlement for your client, and we wish you the best.
Thank you, Casey.
Well, I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.